Well, if you would, go ahead and pick up your Bibles. Turn to Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. We are cruising through the book of Mark. In fact, we really are cruising through it. We're just going to be touching really even some things over some chapters because we're going to be going through like a chapter a week. So last week, if you were here, we left off with Shay reminding us that Jesus was building a new community. Do you remember that? A new community that wasn't based on things that usual communities are based on, but based on a relationship with Jesus, on following this servant, of following Jesus, of trusting him and his word in our lives. And now in chapter 4, I think Jesus really says, you know what, I want you to understand what this trusting in me and following me, if this is what the community is based on, what that really is about. Like, don't fool yourself. I think some of us might be fooling ourselves and we think we're maybe more okay than we think we are. And that brings me to what this chapter did to me when I was going between high school and in college. This is, you ever read something in God's word where after you got done reading it, you went, oh man, I wish I never read that. You ever did that? You know, I hear a couple of like chuckles or something going, yes, I have. You know, it's like when you read it what I mean is that you read it and you go, oh my goodness, if I didn't just read that, I wouldn't know how messed up I really am. Like, or how wrong this really is in my life, or whatever it is. And my mom always said, ignorance is bliss. And it's totally true. So I don't know if that's ever happened to you. This was one of those chapters. This was a place that I read when I was a kid. I knew these parables, these things that Jesus talks about in these chapters. I knew them, but I never really got it. And then one day, I'm reading this in between my high school and my freshman year in college, and it just wrecked me. It tore me apart. What's interesting is that it also was the way of bringing me back together again and building me up from scratch. Maybe you'll see what I'm talking about. So let's just dive right into it. In chapter 4, verse 1, it says this. He began to teach again by the sea, and such a very large crowd gathered to him that he got into a boat in the sea and sat down. And the whole crowd was by the sea on the land. So you're picturing this? Jesus has so many people. It's not even just hundreds. It is thousands of people. So many that in order for him to address the crowd, he has to get away from them. He gets in a boat so he can go out in the sea a little bit so he can say something and broadcast something so that all these thousands of people can hear him. That's how many there are. Now, does that mean, with all these thousands of people now around Jesus, does that mean that Jesus' followers increased by thousands of people? It really doesn't. You guys know that. Just being around Jesus and listening to Jesus, does that make somebody a follower of Jesus? It doesn't. And in fact, Jesus is now going to kind of weed these people out. He's going to weed maybe the people who are just kind of hanging around Jesus with people who really are interested in following him. Because as you know, that part might even be for some of us. In that time, we might be saying, man, what can we get out of Jesus? What can we get from Jesus? Rather than understanding that it's about what Jesus can get from us. It's about what Jesus needs from us. And that, so it's a whole relationship thing that most people really didn't get. But how is Jesus going to now weed them out? And he does it in verse 2. Look what he says. It says, and he was teaching them many things in parables. There's different ways you can define parables. I simply do this, you guys. I just put the three letters C-O-M in front of it. And that helps me remember every time what a parable is. It's a comparable. That's what a parable does. It compares. It compares something in the physical world with something in the spiritual world. That's what it does. So now he gives them this parable, and he says to them, this is what he says in verse 3. Listen to this, or listen up. He says, behold, the sower went out to sow. And as he was sowing, some seed fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate it up. Other seed fell on the rocky ground, where it did not have much soil. And immediately it sprang up because it had no depth of soil. And after the sun had risen, it was scorched. And because it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked it, and it yielded no crop, so there's no fruit at all. Verse 8, he says, other seeds fell into the good soil, and as they grew up and increased, they yielded a crop and produced 30, 60, and 100-fold. And he was saying, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. He actually says the same phrase in the Greek that he began with, listen up. Listen up. Here's what I have to tell you. Hey, if you have ears to hear, listen up. And then he's done. Now, seriously, if we were among those thousands of people in the crowd, you know, we've heard about Jesus. We've been, like, checking him out. He does incredible things. But we also heard that even though he does incredible things, we also heard that he says incredible things, right? We heard, like, he teaches with authority, unlike anybody else teaches. And we're going, man, he says really profound things. And so we're ready. I mean, he gets out in this boat and he's ready to speak. We're like, oh, my goodness. We take out our notepads and stuff. We're ready to write. And he starts talking. And we're like, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Huh? You know, and I could see myself turning to you and going, am I missing this? I mean, is he talking about dirt? I mean, is that what he's talking about, farming? And it's not even like some college level of agriculture. It's like elementary school ag 101, farming 101. I mean, this is what he's saying. Hard soil, bad. Rocks, not good. Weeds, bad. Soil without rocks, without weeds, that's not hard, good. I mean, it is so, like, basic. We're all people that have been in the farming community. We know what he's talking about, but there's absolutely nothing new, and it's almost insulting how simple this is. And we're like, what is going on here? And I could just see us, like, leaving. Maybe sometimes you do this, you leave, maybe you hear a speaker or something, you're like, man, he was kind of off today, wasn't he? Yeah, man, it just, I don't know, he just didn't look like he prepared. Maybe he's just trying to wing it, whatever else. And we're leaving, because he goes on to another parable that talks about farming and seeds and stuff. And we're like, come on. And he goes on to another one. And throughout the entire day, he just throws out these parables like this, and then people probably are just leaving. He's just off. Maybe he'll be on next week. And they take off. But not all of them. Look what happens in verse 10. As soon as he was alone, everybody's left, but not everybody. His followers, see, the people that he kind of weeded out now are gone. Along with the 12 began asking him about the parables. See, they knew, hold it, we must be missing something, because Jesus does say profound things. Jesus doesn't just say little simple things that don't mean anything. There's got to be something we must be missing. And so they ask questions. It's like when you enjoy you're in a class and there's certain classes where you go to and you're like, I'm just in this to get the credit because I don't really care what the subject is. I just have to listen enough, make sure I show up. There it is. You guys know what I'm talking about. You also might have, on maybe a rare occasion, a class that you go, I really care about this. In fact, I care about stuff that's not even on test. I just want to learn this. So you go up after class and you ask questions. You hang out afterwards. You keep asking inquisitive stuff. You try to learn more. And that's what you do. And that's what was doing here. They was just separating these people, because look what Jesus says in verse 11. He says, and he was saying to them, to you it has been given the mystery of the kingdom of God. But those who are outside get everything in parables, so that while seeing they may see and not perceive, while hearing they may hear and not understand. Otherwise, they might return and be forgiven. He's going, you guys are getting this. And the reason why I'm talking in parables is because all these people who really don't care about what I really have to say, they're just going to get bored and go. But you guys, because you really do care about what I have to say and you understand that there's something about what I'm teaching you and saying to you, that's why you stuck afterwards. And if they really did care, they would have stayed. They would have stayed and asked questions. They would have stayed and tried to find out more. Just proves what they are. Just like some of us, halfway through this, we'll look at our phones and go, is this done yet? And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because you don't really care about what Jesus says. You're here for whatever reason. You showed up. But you're ready to just get out of here. You're like, man, I don't know. Maybe we can get In-N-Out or Chipotle. I don't know. Which one should I go to tonight? And I just got other things to do. And you know what? After you leave, it'll take about an hour or two, and you won't even remember what we talked about, because you won't even be going it over in your head. Because it doesn't matter. Because if it really did matter to you, it would be something you would go over. It would be something that you would ask questions about. It would be something you would want to have change your life. But you really don't want it to change your life. Because if you really wanted it to change your life, you know what would happen? It would change your life. Just would. Some of us will even leave here tonight going, man, that was a pretty good sermon, which is probably what you guys are going to all do, but And you're going to say, hey, oh, wow, what a great example. Or, oh, that made me chuckle when he said that. Or some of you might even leave and you're going to say, wow, what a kick in the face. But don't worry, because after a couple hours, the numbness will go away. And after a couple of days, the swelling will go down. And a few days after that, it won't look like you've been kicked at all. And you know exactly what I mean, because that's a cycle you've been on for a long time. Kicks in the face, but no real change. What are we doing here? What are we even doing? Gosh, we haven't even got to what the parable means yet. Let's go. Okay. Verse 13. He said to them, do you not understand this parable? How will you understand all the parables? In other words, he's saying, man, if you can get this one parable down, you're probably going to understand the rest of the stuff that I said today. But if you don't get this one down, you're not going to really get anything. So it's really important you get this one. So then he says it. By the way, he's now going to tell them that it's not about soils at all. It's not about dirt at all. It's not about farming at all. It's about people. It's about different people who respond to Jesus' words. You're going to see here that every single soil has one thing in common. They all hear the word. They all hear Jesus' message. They all hear what Jesus has to say. Every single one of them. So it's not about hearing, is it? Hearing doesn't guarantee change. There's something else that has to happen, and it's how you respond to what you hear that makes the difference, all the difference in the world. And Jesus says there's four different ways that people respond to my word. Four. Here's the first one. It says in verse 14, the sower sows the word, and these are the ones who are beside the road where the word is sown, and when they hear, immediately Satan comes and takes away the word which has been sown in them. It's the hard soil. It's people that when Jesus' words are thrown at them, it just bounces off of them. It doesn't even go in one ear and out the other. It just goes in one ear and comes out that ear. I mean, it doesn't go in at all. They don't care about following Jesus and his word. They hear it because they just happen to hear it. And the people there would probably have been thinking about like the Pharisees, the religious leaders. You remember them, you know. They were listening to Jesus, but they weren't listening in order for Jesus to change their life. And they didn't make any qualms about that. They just said, we don't care about following Jesus and his word, period. We don't want to. They hear it and it just bounces off. Now, is that a pretty sad case? Yeah. That's pretty bad. This is pretty bad soil. It's so hard. Nothing will even penetrate it. They're saying, I don't care about following Jesus, period. Then he says there's a second kind of soil, a second kind of person that responds to Jesus' words. And it says this, in a similar way in verse 16, these are the ones on whom seed was sown on the rocky places, who when they hear the word, immediately receive it with joy. So there's another kind of person that it doesn't bounce off of them. It goes in and they're like, they accept it really fast. They hear maybe certain phrases like peace and love and acceptance. And they're like, oh, this is awesome. I am in. And they hear about Jesus for the first time or something. And they are in. But they're in before they even really know what it's about. And they're in because they have an idea of what they hope that it's about. Because they're in going, okay, I'm going to follow Jesus and he is going to change my life. But they don't really mean change my life. They mean change my life. Things around me. You know, he'll make things better. He'll make things that are broken around me better. But he's not into that. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. Following Jesus and understanding the gospel is not about him changing the world around you. It's about him changing you in the midst of a world that's around you. It's about him. Look, he's into changing you and freeing you from the slavery of sin. But that doesn't mean that he's going to take you out of a world that's been scarred with sin, that's been devastated with sin. In fact, if anything around you does change, the Bible indicates that it's probably going to change not for the better, but for the worse. But he is molding you and making you exactly the way you need to be with purpose and with meaning. And being able to go through anything that happens around you. That's what he's doing. But some people don't get that, right? Maybe you even know people who don't get that. They go, oh yeah, I'm into following Jesus because he's going to make everything better. And if you have that attitude, you're going to be disappointed really quickly. Which is what it says in verse 17. They have no firm root in themselves, but are only temporary. Then when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, so they didn't get that. immediately they fall away. They go, well, I followed Jesus to get away from affliction, and now there's even more affliction because I'm following his word? I didn't sign up for that. And so they're gone. Jesus failed me. Jesus doesn't care. So I'm gone. Then there's another soil. It says in verse 18, and others are the ones on whom the seed was sown among the thorns. These are the ones who have heard the word, but the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. There's no fruit. He says there's another soil that says, yes, I'm willing to have Jesus and his word in my life. Just stay right here. I'm going to compartmentalize. You can have part of me. You can come in part of my life, but it's a big difference between adding Jesus to your life and handing Jesus your life. Right? There's a big difference with that, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with like adding Jesus to my life, but I understand he's going to take care of some worries, like my worry of going to hell. He'll take care of that. But all these other worries that I have day to day, I need something else and some other tactic and some other thing to help me with those worries. He'll give me some riches and he'll give me some of the things I desire, but I also have these desires too that I need to have met somewhere else. And you know what happens. Those of us who are weedy soil, we know exactly what happens. Every time there's a competition between Jesus and the other thing will always win. Every time. Jesus and his word does not choke out the weeds. The weeds will always choke out Jesus and the word. That's what'll happen every time. But at least we have Jesus in our lives, which is better than nothing. This is what I was, by the way. When God had shown me this, I went, I know exactly what I am. My strategy was adding Jesus to my life. That was my strategy. Because it was at least better than nothing. But I wasn't quite ready, you know, to do something radical, like give him my whole life or have him be, you know, in my entire life. Because I knew if I did that, I would have to give up some certain things and some certain people. So that was my strategy. Then he says there's a fourth soil. Look at verse 20. And those are the ones on whom seed was sown on the good soil. And they hear the word. And by the way, when it says they hear the word here, it's in a different tense. The verb is a different tense. It's talking about continually hearing the word. All the other ones have this idea that you hear the word and then you stop. This one says, the good soil always wants to continue to hear more and more of what Jesus' direction is in their life. And the same thing is with this accept. The word accept here is in a present tense, which means an ongoing, I'm going to continue to accept whatever I'm hearing. So the more I hear, the more I want to accept. And then, of course, you see the more fruit. You continue to bear fruit as you keep on going. And then it says the person bears 30-fold and then 60-fold and 100-fold. As it continues to mature and stuff, the thing matures in the soil, then that person, and it continues to just grow. By the way, the fruit that it's talking about there, fruit always reflects the seed. And if the seed is the word, then the fruit is a life that reflects the word of Jesus. That's simply as that. It's a life that shows the word of Jesus in their life. And it keeps on happening a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more areas and a little bit more in their life. That's what good soil does. So you have those four soils. And for a long time, until Jesus just hit me, this is what I thought about the four soils. Maybe you can do it with me. Which is the worst soil? Pretty easy, right? The worst soil is hard soil. Doesn't even want to hear it all. It's like the Pharisees, like the religious leaders. They totally have rejected Jesus and the word. Then you have the next stage. Here's hard soil. Then you have rocky soil. Rocky soil is better than hard soil. It's still not great. Rocky soil is better, though, because at least accepts Jesus for a little while until things get tough, and then they drop Jesus. But it's better at least than nothing. Then, of course, then you have weedy soil, which is even better than that because they don't drop Jesus at all, right? They're the ones who go, I'm going to add Jesus to my life, and now it's not the best because I'm just adding Jesus to my life, and I've got all these other things I'm living for as well, but I just got, you know, Jesus is there, and that's better than nothing and better than something that's just there for a little while, and that's where I was. And I went, okay, well, I'm at least better than nothing. I know that maybe one day, maybe I'll become good soil. So there's the stages. Hard, rocky, weedy, good. Like almost like a staircase. And then I discovered this, and it's like God just slammed me. And he said, PJ, why are you looking at this like a florist? What? Why are you looking at this like a florist? This isn't meant to be looked at like a florist. It's meant to be looked at from the perspective of what? A farmer. It's about farming. And I went, oh. See, a farmer is only concerned about fruit, not concerned about leaves and plants. Plants are just the means to the end. They're concerned about fruit. We live in an area, we all know, in our agricultural area, what do people really care about? Everything is driving to do what? To produce more what? Fruit. Can you imagine if somebody had 1,000 acres? 1,000 acres. And at harvest time, there wasn't even one grape. You think that farmer's going to go out there and say, well, I know there's no grapes, but man, those plants look good, don't they? There's no way. They don't care. They don't care about that. They care about producing fruit. How much fruit does hard soil produce? Zero. How much fruit does rocky soil produce? Five. Zero. How much fruit does weedy soil produce? Oh, 10. Zero. From a farmer's perspective, hard soil, rocky soil, weedy soil, good soil. There's not four kinds of people. There's only two. Good and bad. There's three types of bad. There's three types of nothing, but they're all the same. They're all nothing. That killed me. Because now I couldn't use the excuse anymore that at least I was better than nothing. Now I'm just on a journey. You know, it's at least it's better than this, and one day I'll get. And Jesus was going, no, it's not. You're just as good as nothing. But at least I'm better than somebody who totally rejects Jesus. No, you're exactly the same as somebody who totally rejects Jesus. It really is all or nothing. Because if it's not all, if it's not all in, if it's not me doing totally in, everything else there is, every other option there is nothing. That's the point of this parable, so that we would stop fooling ourselves. Thinking that we were at some other stage that was better than nothing, but not quite there. It just doesn't exist. And it was killing me because now I couldn't be okay. Just like some of you, it's killing you, and you're like, why did I come here tonight? Ignorance is bliss. But you know why you're here. Because you had to hear this. Because you've been fooling yourself too. That's why some of us, we're in our dorm rooms, we're at work, wherever else, and we are have Jesus as part of our life. We're doing this little dance. We got the game down. We got it down. We got a foot in. We got a foot out. We got it, you know, halfway, whatever, and it's better than nothing. But we look at people that have nothing. We look at people who totally rejected Jesus, and deep down we know, and we ever actually sense, I'm not any more satisfied than they are. Why am I not really feeling like I'm really that different and have really much more purpose than they do? You know why? Because you don't. They're producing zero fruit, and you're producing zero fruit. That's why. You are the same. That's why there are people in your life. Some of you are going, man, now it makes sense. Why are there people in your life that when they look at your life, they don't see anything different? But you're like, but no, I have Jesus in my life. They don't have Jesus at all in their life. And they're looking at you going, yeah, but just be, I don't see it. What's the difference? And you're like, well, I pray before I eat. I got a Bible. And I go to church. And they're going, uh-huh. You're not any different than us. And you know why that is? Because they're right. Because they're looking at their life and they're producing no fruit, and they look at yours and you're not producing any fruit. You're the same. Because halfway in, partway in, is nothing.
is not in at all. And we have to come to a point where we're not okay being anything but good soil. We're not okay at all. By the way, on the flip side, it is okay to be good soil. I don't know if any of you guys know what I'm talking about. Listen to what I'm talking about. I've been in groups before. It's like if you get in a group of people right now and you're like, okay, let's go around and we just went over the four soils. What soil are we? And somebody, oh, I'm rocky soil, I'm weedy soil, and I'm, nobody's going to say good soil. Nobody. Nobody says good soil, because you know why? Because if that person says good soil, and if you say good soil, what do you know everybody else is going to say? Oh man, you're arrogant. Oh, so you're good soil, huh? No weeds in you at all, really? Because I could find some right now. You know, no rocks, really? Are you kidding me? And so we use even percentages. You ever done that? You know, well, I'm 40% good, 23% rocky, you know. That, where is that in this thing? Because we can't say we're good soil. It's okay to be good soil. Good soil does not mean perfect soil. Do you hear that? Good soil does not mean sinless soil. Good soil doesn't even mean mature soil. You could be a follower of Jesus for one day and be good soil, because good soil is about an attitude of the heart that doesn't want to play any more games with God. That you're going, you know what? I don't want to be halfway in. I understand it's all or nothing, and I want them all. That's what I want. I know that there's certain days I'm stupid, but that's not my heart. I want to be in. And I want to trust it. I want to be the person who continues to hear. I want to keep hearing. And as I keep hearing, I want to keep accepting. And as I keep accepting, I want to continue to bear fruit. And a little bit more fruit and a little bit more fruit. And part of my life, this part of my life will look like it's following Jesus' words. And then as I mature, a little bit more will. And a little bit more will. And a little bit more will. See, good soil is never there. It just means that you're on the right track. But good soil isn't perfect. Otherwise, he wouldn't say 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. You see already there. It's just, that's the only one that bears fruit at all. And as you keep maturing, you just continue to bear more fruit. So obviously, you haven't arrived. You keep arriving. That's good soil. It's okay to be good soil, you guys. At the same time, some of us need to actually admit that we're not. I would never have said I was good soil, to be honest. I would have told people I was. You know, yeah, I really want Jesus to have my life. But I really didn't. And I thought it was okay. It wasn't as good as what it could be, but it was better then. And it's not. In fact, from a real farmer's perspective, this is what really slammed me. From a farmer's perspective, they would rather have hard soil. Think about it. Hard soil, nothing even grows at all. The person already knows, no crop. I don't have to invest any money in it. I don't have to do anything with it. I know I'm getting nothing. You know what happens with rocky soil? The farmer gets excited. It looks like the best soil ever. Things grow super fast, and then 3 weeks later, they go out and everything's dead. How depressing would that be? Way worse than hard soil. What's even worse than that is weedy soil, what I am, what I was. The weedy soil is the worst. Because here's the farmer investing all this money, all this time, all these resources to water, to fertilize, to insecticide, all that stuff. And then at harvest time, they get the exact same amount as if they didn't do anything at all. You tell me what's worse. Hard soil. They're not playing any games, at least. Rocky soil. Weedy soil. Good soil. Changes everything, doesn't it? What is Jesus going to do with us, you guys? What is Jesus going to do with us who are not good soil? Probably the same thing that he did with his disciples. Look at the very end. We're just going to cruise to the end here. Look at verse 34. He goes through these parables all day talking about really what it means to follow him and his word and the benefits of it. And then he gets to verse 34 and it says this. He didn't speak to them without a parable, but he was explaining everything privately to his own disciples. So they're getting it. He's teaching them. He's lecturing them all day long. And then it says in verse 35, on that day when evening came, that same day evening comes, he said to them, let's go over to the other side. The other side of the lake. Here's the lake there. Let's get in a boat. Let's go over to the other side of the lake. And they go, okay, you know what this is? It's pop quiz. This is a test now. They've gone through it all. They understand what it means to trust him and his word. And now he's saying, okay, let's put you to the test. And he gives them a word. Let's go to the other side. And they go, okay, let's go. Hey, we're trusting him. They get to the middle of the lake, and you remember what happens? If you keep on reading, get to the middle of the lake, and there's a huge windstorm that comes up. So much wind, it's like a hurricane force wind, that it makes the waves so large that it starts filling up the boat. The waves come over the edge of the boat, filling it up and sinking the boat so fast and so much that the disciples cannot get the water out. They turn around, and Jesus is asleep in the back of the boat. I wish I could sleep that hard. You know, he's sleeping in the back of the boat, and so then they tag him, and they go, hey, wake up. And they say, don't you care that we're perishing? Don't you care that we're going to die? Jesus gets up, says, be quiet to the sea and to the waves, or to the waves, to the wind, and everything becomes completely, totally calm. And then he turns to his disciples and says, see how much power I have? I'm pretty good, huh? Is that what he says to them? A lot of people look at this account at the end of the chapter and don't realize how it's connected with all the teaching of that day. They think the account at the end of the chapter is about Jesus' demonstration of power. Oh, look how much power and authority Jesus has. That is not what it's about. That's secondary. This whole account is not about Jesus demonstrating his authority and power. It's about the disciples demonstrating a lack of faith. He turns to them and doesn't say, do you see how much authority I have? He turns to them and says, why are you being cowardly? Where's your faith? Why is it that you have no faith? He says, why aren't you more assured that we would get to the other side? I told you we would get to the other side. But as soon as you hit the storm, because of my word, you guys fell. They're a classic case of what soil? Rocky. They're rocky soil. That's what they are. They are actually in, they face the hurricane because of the word. When you face affliction or persecution because of the word, you quickly fall away. That's what they are. And some of us, Jesus actually takes us through the same kind of tests, doesn't he? He says, you know what? He gives you a word. He says, man, I want you to go in this direction. I want you to live your life in this way. And so we go, okay, I trust you. And so we go, and then we hit a hurricane. And we hit waves. And we turn around, and Jesus is asleep. And we're like, what are you doing? You don't even care? And some of us are going through something like that even right now. And he's just testing your faith. He's showing you what your faith is. It's not because he hates you. It's because he loves you enough that he doesn't want you to keep fooling yourself. He wants you to see what you are. Jesus did not promise them that they wouldn't get wet. He promised them that they would get to the other side. He didn't even promise the boat would make it to the other side. He didn't promise them they wouldn't be swimming half the way. He didn't promise they wouldn't be facing a hurricane. He simply said, let's go to the other side. And then, of course, you know, at the end of the chapter, chapter 5 starts out with Jesus dumping these guys and getting 12 new guys. Some of us go, what? No, that's not what happened. Like, what? What? Where? I didn't know that. The miraculous thing is he gets to the other side and he doesn't dump these guys. He should have. Shouldn't he? He should have. But he didn't. Because that's what Jesus does with whatever soil we are. He wants to stick with you. If you're willing to stick with him. You know what might be even more miraculous? Is not that Jesus didn't leave them, it's that they didn't leave Jesus. Because what kind of soil are they? Rocky. What does rocky soil do when a going gets tough? They leave. And they didn't say at the end of this thing, man, we failed again. This is just too hard. Let's just go home. They went, okay. And Jesus takes them in chapter 5 and takes them through lab. Lecture, test, and now he's going to take them through lab. He's going to show them what real faith in him does look like so they can learn a little bit more. And he's going to test them again. They're going to fail again. And he's going to stick with them still and walk them through it as long as they're willing to walk with him. So here's what we can do as we leave today. Look, if you're good soil, it's okay. If you're good soil, would you just realize that you haven't arrived? Being good soil doesn't mean you arrive, it means you're on the right track. If you're good soil, would you understand? Would you just remind yourself, oh yeah, it's about continually hearing. I'll never be done hearing. I need to continue to hear more and more so that I will continue to accept more and more and more as I continue to mature and things mature and the word matures in me so that I will bear even more fruit. And my life will just reflect a little bit more next year of following Jesus and his word than it does this year. And a little bit more after that, and a little bit more after that, and a little bit more after that. And I realize that's the journey I'm on. It's an exciting road. It is an awesome road. It's not a safe road. You're going to hit hurricanes. You're going to get wet. You might lose your boat. But it's an awesome ride. Just realize that if you're good soil. If you're one of the other soils, would you do this? Would you please, tonight, humble yourself? Throw out all the excuses and all the reasons why you're better than, you're at least not, and seriously open your eyes and say, I am just exactly the same as completely and fully rejecting Jesus totally. That's what I am. I'm not better than, I'm exactly the same as that. So something has to change. Would you also realize that Jesus doesn't want to leave you, but he wants to walk with you to make that change? Are you just willing? But are you now willing enough to not be satisfied with where you are, because it's critical that you can't stay where you are? And you need to turn to him to take you in a place where you can never get on your own. Would you just think about that? We're going to pray and we're going to sing a song. And would you just do this? Would you process, even while we're singing the song, would you just kind of think, what's my response to Jesus? What do I need to do now? Let's pray.